Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And it's good to be here today, guys. I am recording. I felt like we got back into a pretty steady recording schedule. And I am recording yet again on a Thursday. Just heading down to Ocean Shores with the kiddos and the in-laws for a couple days. Going to work from down there tomorrow. And so we got to bring it today. And I'm always excited to get away with the fam, but I'm a little bit bummed that I'm not going to be here tomorrow. And the reason that I'm a little bit bummed that I'm not going to be here tomorrow is I want to talk to you guys about what's happening tomorrow. We're just at a fascinating place in markets right now. And I was telling the people on KTTH that join us for that first 3-minute intro, was just telling them how, you know, this knife fight that we talked about, this transition from, you know, everything being tech all the time, and I don't think you're looking at a big tech collapse on the horizon, at least in the immediate near future. But talking about how we thought that tech only run, right, that has been so dominant over the last 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, we thought that you were going to see a sharp change in that due to valuation spreads, all the different things we talked about. And we said that it would be a knife fight, that the buy the dip in tech, buy tech no matter what, just because it's down, that was going to be a tough muscle to break. And it really, we also really felt that, you know, until that happened, or at least that tech story wasn't the only story out there, it was going to be really hard for, you know, other sectors to get a bounce. It was going to be really hard for value to come back. And the bottom line is this, when you've got one sector like that that's making everybody money, that's where all the capital goes, right? It's really that simple. And, you know, when that lasts long enough, then people become, you know, really indifferent about valuations, kind of throw fundamentals out the window. Obviously, we've seen all that take place. And what's amazing to me, though, is we said we thought it was going to be a knife fight, that tech wasn't going to go easy. We were more right than we thought, because this has lasted so much longer. And I really don't think it can, just because so many different things are at extremes, okay? So I want to get into that and lay that out here in the market update. And the other thing that I want to talk about in the market update, let's see, are we going to review that? No, it's probably not. The other thing I want to talk about is a video. And here at the beginning of the episode, I think it's a video that everybody, and guys, I know that there are people across the entire political spectrum that listen to this show. All right. And quite honestly, that's one of the reasons I like to keep politics out of it. Not so we get better ratings or more people call us or whatever, just because, like I've said a million times, the world of financing and investing is complicated enough. It's tough enough to further muddy the waters by injecting political discussions into it. But I really think that this video goes beyond political boundaries. I think this video goes to really the battle for the soul of the country. And by that, when I say soul, I'm not talking religiously. I'm talking about what makes America, America. And it's a fascinating video that you guys can all get on YouTube and watch. And I've mentioned it before on the show, but I heard it again. And I think it's going to be one of those videos that I bring up every now and again, just because I think it is so important. And let's pull it up here. Let's see. So it's the type in KGB defector into the YouTube search engine, and the thing that pops up is KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov 1985 interview. this is a very well documented, very well known guy that was pretty pretty high up, pretty prominent guy in the KGB, and he defected here, I believe, in the was it in the early 70s, late 60s, something like that, and I believe let's see how long it is. It's not that long. It's about a 27 minute video, and the reason you need to watch it is because it is so tied into the things that we are seeing culturally here today. And I think so much of what has gotten into the political zeitgeist of today was intended, and it was tended to be divisive, and it was tended to separate us and divide us as a country, and really to kind of attack the, if you will, attack the, you know, kind of a Trojan horse approach, right? Attack us from the inside. You know we can't take you on militarily, so this is how we're going to take you on. You know, it's a 1985 interview, and he uses the word "quote unquote" social justice. If for nothing else, you should just watch it, because you sit there and you listen to it, and you're like, "Good Lord, how was this guy so ahead of his time?" So anyway, again, go to YouTube and type in KGB defector Yuri. Well, shoot, let's see. KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov, Y-U-R-I. But if you just type in KGB defector, it comes up. So anyway, that's just something I want to share with you guys that I think is really important, and it should not be a political issue. Both people on the political aisles, and for that matter, I think people on both sides, I've had this conversation with people on both sides of the political aisle that are rational, level-headed people, and they found this video to be completely terrifying and completely pertinent. So anyway, give that. It's kind of a little homework assignment for the weekend. getting on to the market update, guys. So why this is so intriguing to me is it's the maximization points, and then it's also the movement underneath the markets. Again, going back to when we sat there and we're talking about how, you know, how this was going to be a knife fight, how it was going to be brutal. You know, how we thought that this turn over into the inflationary assets and value in particular and all that kind of stuff was going to happen. But we said it wasn't going to be easy, that it was going to be a fight, that they were going to exchange blows, that things were going to go back and forth. Again, and I've said this before, but it's really amazing. We were so much more right than we thought we'd be. But even on a day like today, right, you get a kind of a decent open, and then the ramp starts. And the ramp was incessant in markets until at least the first 2-3 hours of the session. And energy was getting smacked down. Energy stocks were getting smacked down. And everything small cap and value, like looking at Russell 2000, it was lagging the indexes horribly. There's another tech day. Boom, right? Then as the session went on, tech started pulling back. Russell 2000 rallied. Energy started turning back around. And by the end of the day, you'd seen a flip where then the Russell 2000 closed at 1.59%, up 1.59%. NASDAQ was up just over 1. Let's see. Yeah, NASDAQ was up 1.05. Then you look at the dollar index, okay? So hold on. Let's go back to the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ right now is at 14,654. Downside support on a technical basis, very well defined, is 14,250 on the NASDAQ. Okay. Upside resistance is 14,008. You're at 14,654. You started creeping up to 14,008 today and then pulled right back from it. And now you've settled right between those marks. But basically, you've got the NASDAQ 2% away from that lower support range. You have the Russell about 2% away from its upper resistance range. You've got the DXY, the dollar index, breaking out. Not like a crazy breakout, but it's above 94. Let's see, where is that at? We closed at 94.20. Anytime the DXY has gotten over 93 in the past several years, things started to get testy. Wouldn't say things started to break. I think every time the dollar index has gotten over 100, things have started to break. Let's see, where else are you at? You're at oil threatening that $80 mark, which is kind of a big psychological barrier. Everywhere you look, things are at extremes. It's really crazy. And we've been talking about this for 6 months, and it just keeps building, and this thing just keeps stretching further and further than I thought it would. I will tell you, it really looks, the other thing is you've got yields popping here. 10-year today, 10-year U.S. Treasury was up at 1.57, pretty big pop. That's probably what drove the pullback in tech throughout the session as interest rates started to go. What we've seen is that high-flying, high-valuation tech stuff starts to break with the 10-year above 1.6, especially at 1.7. It got a little bit crazy last time, which makes sense. I will still say, if I'm handicapping it, it looks like tech could continue to struggle. Maybe it holds that support level. But if I'm a betting man, I'd bet that that value rotation is coming back on strong. That's the way it looks. It looks like energy's getting ready for another run here. You're kind of in it, but you got XOP. Where did we close out with XOP, which is an energy ETF? It really is kind of gives me the best picture of the overall market. XOP tried to go below the support level at 100 to right around 99, and it's battled back 2 days in a row and then snapped back really hard today. I think you had about a 3%. Yeah, you were at the lows of the day. You had it down at 99.78. It closed about 3% above that, so it rallied back about 3% through the session. You guys, if you didn't listen to the deep dive interview with Chase last weekend, I'd strongly suggest you do that, talking about the pending energy crisis and how bad it can get. I still continue to love energy here. And a lot of it, guys, I can't tell you where the price of oil and price of natural gas is going in the immediate future. All signs point to a lot higher just because of the shortages. And the other thing that I wanted to point out on the natural gas, if you listen to what we were talking about last week on the last week deep dive interview, there's a lot of people out there that are really doubtful about a potential spike that high in, you know, $120 to $150 barrel of oil, or, you know, $8 to $10 natural gas, or $15 natural gas. There's a lot of people out there that poo-poo that, that kind of that toss it aside and disregard it. And I completely understand. Here's the one thing that you have to keep in mind, okay? Energy is a unique asset in the sense that when you need it, there is no price you will not pay. If your children, if you've got kids and it's a brutally hard winter and you need to heat your house, right? There's no price you will not pay to do that. Right. It's not like lumber. You know, when lumber spiked, you can stall your building project or your home building project or whatever. You can stall it for 3 to 6 months and wait for things to settle down. You can't do that with energy. Right. And it really just kind of comes down to math. If you have a seriously, if you have a tough winter, let's say if you have an average winter to worse than average winter, you probably just don't have enough reserves stacked up around the world. It's a matter of looking at the inventories. If you have a tough winter, which it looks like you could, I'm not a weatherman, you could have serious issues. And by serious issues, you know, nat gas is currently trading at $5.50, $6, something like that. You know, potentially you could see nat gas spike to $40, $50, $60, $80. Again, it's not about it being economical at that level, but it's about if there isn't enough of it and people are freezing to death. And I look, don't get me wrong. I'm not making an investment on people's pain, right? That's not what this is at all. And it does not miss me that if this scenario plays out, it's really bad. Just in this business, I really don't have any other way to handle it other than to make sure that our clients are protected from that. So as much of but here's the other thing. You don't need that scenario to play out to make energy attractive to me long term. Because the other thing that everybody keeps, you know, I hear all these people going, oh yeah, everybody's, you know, it's such a crowded trade. Well, first of all, energy is not a crowded trade. Okay, just look at the weighting in the S&P 500. It's just not a crowded trade. There's a lot of people talking about it, but it's just not a crowded trade. I think the thing that people are missing is, yes, it's been a dramatic rally in energy, but let's put it in perspective. Okay, 6 months ago, the XOP, which is the ETF. Now think of how much everybody's been talking about inflation and fuel. Nobody was talking about natural gas shortages 6 months ago. Okay, in June, on June 25th, XOP closed at 99.75. Today it's at 102.79. 6 months later, it's up 2.5-3%. Okay? So like I was telling some other people on Twitter, I was like, guys, I understand it's been a nice run in energy, and maybe it's a little overdone in the short term, but we're at the highs that we were at 6 months ago. Okay, so we're not buying lumber at 1,500. The other thing is, pull up the chart on a lot of these things, right? Pull up a chart on XOP, okay? Back in December 2nd, 2016, XOP was at 168. We're roughly 70% higher than it is today. Okay, let's go to September 28th, 2018, 173. Right, we're not at this crazy nosebleed level. The other thing, too, is you look at the price of natural gas. When XOP was at 165, 170, guys, nat gas prices were below 250 probably. They were certainly below 3. Okay, nat gas is currently at 550, 60. Right, $5.50 to $6. Okay, look at oil. Oil's right around 80. Right, end of 2016, oil wasn't at 80. Right, it dropped hard. So you look at the underlying commodities, the prices of the underlying commodities, then you compare them historically to where they're at. These stocks are dirt cheap. And that's what makes it intriguing to me, guys, is, yeah, do you have the moonshot capability in a lot of these energy plays? Absolutely, you do. But at these levels, despite what a lot of other people say, I just think they make very attractive investments. I can't tell you what the individual stock does, but when I'm buying a company that's paying me a 9% dividend or a 10% dividend, and they're solid, and they got great cash, and they're cash flowing like crazy, I'll sit back and collect 7, 8, 9, 10% while I wait for something to go up in price. So, you know, that really is the biggest thing to me about the whole energy play. But like I said, you have these pressures building, and I think the longer that we don't break out one way or the other, right, where tech resumes leading or value and energy really do take the torch and run with it, I think you're just building up energy in this move, right? The longer this move grinds sideways, the more powerful it's going to be when it breaks. And we could be wrong, but when you look at rates, when you look at inflation, when you look at energy prices, when you look at the technical levels in the markets, nobody knows anything definitively, but it really looks like toward the end of the year here, we're breaking out into what we were talking about, which is the tech continuing to struggle. I think my prediction going into the year was I think that you could see the NASDAQ slightly negative to maybe flat on the year. I realize the NASDAQ's probably up, 12-13% so far this year. I think it's entirely possible that it could close flat on the year, slightly negative, and you could see value and energy just continue to run. The other fundamental reason behind why I think that that is a possibility is if you think about energy prices, if energy prices do continue to run, you're just sucking money out of the economy that would be going to other companies, right? So there is a fundamental driver behind why we think that this breakout could be happening. Now, it doesn't mean like companies like Amazon are going to get smoked, but if you've got $120 barrel of oil, right, and people are paying $7, $8 at the pump, they're going to buy less stuff from Amazon, right? It's just a capital issue, right? There's only so many dollars to go around. So, you know, and then you've got the rising rates, which I think is going to it always does, right? Put a pressure on valuations. It really looks like it. And I'm kind of bummed that I'm leaving town tomorrow because you with this spike up in rates here, maybe tomorrow's the day. But just so you guys know at home, I mean, you're watching that 25, I think it's that 2,500 level on the Russell 2000. I'm watching that $80 level on, oil. You know, nat gas, I don't really think has a key level. But I really haven't studied that chart. I really don't think that, you know, nat gas is being so driven by just a massive under supply. So, you know, that thing could do whatever. That's going to be like riding a bucking bronco. There is still so much room, in my opinion, left in this energy side of things. Uranium trade continues to look good. They're hanging in there. They're hovering right by breakout levels too. This is what I'm saying. I mean, you just keep going down the list, and either you've got something bumping up against a lower support level that if it breaks that, it looks like it's in trouble, or it's bumping up against a higher resistance level where it looks like if it's going to break through that, it's going to rip. I mean, everywhere you look, that's what you see. It's really a fascinating deal. So anyway, that's about it for the market update. Again, I just the things you want to watch, guys, is just really to me, it's NASDAQ, it's energy, and keep an eye on the Russell because it's sort of a proxy now for more value plays. I wouldn't suggest investing in it directly because there's a lot of other stuff in the Russell that is not any, you know, I think isn't AMC like the top position or something in there. So and it's like I've explained before, it's a weird index right now because of how long tech has rallied and how, you know, how small caps and mid caps have really historically underperformed throughout this entire rally. So naturally, those are the companies that are just smaller by market cap. And it's really that simple. What was the other, let's see here. There's one other thing I wanted to get to. No, we're going to get to the, we're going to get to a comprehensive discussion about bonds. It's not going to be the same old discussion in the next segment about bonds. I just really want to take some time and go through a fact-based discussion, looking at both the potential upsides to bonds, downsides to bonds, and why we take the position that we do. Because I think that that's a really important thing for people to understand and realize that we're not just selling it's not a sales pitch. We're not just trying to get people to buy into our bond replacement strategy, that it is, we just want to lay out exactly what those issues are. Anyway, as always, guys, if you are interested in our risk management approach, right, which is first of all, actively managing portfolios, okay, making sure that our clients are exposed to the things like nat gas and uranium that people aren't talking about, right? Making sure that when we see storm clouds on the horizon, like we did last, you know, January and February, and like I tell you guys, one of the advantages to being on the radio show is you can go back and listen to the shows we did last January and February to see if we did actually warn people about it, and if we did see it coming. It's one of the benefits of being on the radio, right? It's really easy to see whether we're charlatans or whether we actually know what we're talking about. But what we were able to do is we didn't know how bad it was going to be, but it looked bad enough to put some protection on, right? So we put things in our portfolios that went up when the markets went down. Our stock portfolios were down about 11%. The market was down 36. Then we turned around and took advantage of those low prices and bought up a bunch of stuff, you know, between April and May and the end of March, and turned around and we had a great year last year. We're up 20% and we're up about 24 this year or something like that. I haven't checked performance today. We had a good day today. I think a lot of people did. But anyway, if you're interested in that risk management strategy, guys, and you should be, right? More upside, less downside risk, less cost. Call us, take the 3 minutes to figure out if it's true, right? To see what we do, how we can drastically lower your risk, drastically lower your fees, and increase your upside, right? This isn't smoke, right? Just give us a call, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Follow me on Twitter, at kyrradio.com. You guys know the drill. We're going to be right back, kick off our discussion on bonds. Stick with us. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the break. And want to bring up a discussion, and I know we talk about bonds a lot, you guys, but the audience has grown quite a bit and look to be growing here pretty soon. That's the way it looks anyway. We'll keep you posted on that. Spreading out to new markets, which is kind of exciting. But I just want, I wanted to take some time. And I think I alluded to this last week. About the bonds, the bond replacements that we talk about, fixed indexed annuities, how it fits in. There's so much angst. And it really reminds me a lot of political discussions today, where I feel like everybody is pat talking past each other, and everybody is more urgent to get out their perspective than they are to actually find out the truth or to disseminate the truth, right? It's they want to show you how much I know. Listen to that. And you could make the same argument. I guess you could make the argument we're doing the same. The difference is that we're going to approach it on a fact-based and completely data-reliant way, because it's stupid to deal with investing and finance in any other capacity, right? Your money doesn't feel, your money doesn't think. It is numbers. It is binary. It is ones and zeros. So you start injecting, you know, conjecture and political ideology and all this stuff. It's complete nonsense. And people can have different opinions on what they think is going to happen. But there's a lot of stuff that gets passed off as opinion or a difference of opinion that isn't. It's just one party is wrong or misinformed. And I'm not saying that, you know, that I'm omniscient and I know who's right and who's wrong and we're never wrong. But on this topic, I know who's right and wrong, because there's very little subjectivity to it. What is the problem that we have with bonds? What is it that you should be afraid of owning bonds? What is it? People are like, they don't pay a lot. Yeah, that is a problem, right? But what is the real problem with bonds? So let's start from the beginning. Okay, the reason bonds have had such a prominent role in so many of your portfolios is because of the stretch of time from 1980 to 2000. Okay, that's kind of when the birth of this new portfolio was born, right? The asset allocation model, the 60-40 stock bond portfolio, that's the way it was all born. And then we got to look back to the 80s and you had record high interest rates. So what did Alan Greenspan do every single time? The maestro, right? The economy would hit a pothole, and Greenspan, in an effort to re-stimulate the economy and avoid recession or to shorten a recession that we had, like the short recession we had at the end of 92, or was it beginning of 92? Anyway, right around 92. That truthfully, looking back on it, probably cost George Bush won the election. That and Ross Perot. There's a name you haven't heard in a while. But right, every time you'd have an economic disruption in an effort to truncate that recession or to avoid recession, Greenspan would cut rates. And when interest rates go down, bonds go up. And as people so often do, they get used to a relationship. They forget about the relationship, and then it becomes stocks down, bonds up, and they forget about the middleman, right? So why am I so confident that that's the case? Well, because from 1980 to 2008, it really is the only period in time where you saw this really definitive relationship between stocks and bonds. The rest of the time, it was kind of all over the place. There were times where they did work like that, where stocks went down, bonds went up. There were times where they didn't. It was really hit and miss. And so what you've done is you've built this law, right, around a temporary scenario that no longer works that way. And why doesn't it work that way? Because interest rates are a zero, right? And you go back to 2008, that's the first time since the Great Depression where stocks and bonds were both down more than 25% a year, right? Everybody thinks about the stock market crash going back to 2008 is what killed people. It's not. It was what the bonds did, right? Had the bonds done their historic job and gone up when markets went down? Now, U.S. Treasuries went up, but had bonds done their job and held up their end of it and rallied when stocks went down? The damage to people's portfolios would have been a lot worse. It wouldn't have been fun, right? But instead of being down 40% in their 60-40 portfolio, they'd have been down, you know, 22, 23. Not nearly as disruptive. And what we've seen since 2008, again, makes sense because interest rates have been at zero virtually the entire time, save for an 18-month period of time. And then everything started going wonky again. So what did they have to do? They had to push rates back to zero. What I'm saying is that there is no room left, right? For now, treasuries may still react that way. They did last March, but they don't pay anything. And people are like, well, I could still own treasuries. Yeah, and make 1.5% in an inflationary environment at 5.1. It was like the client looked at me the other day and he goes, that's not true, Zach. I got a bond portfolio paying 6.5. And I looked at him, I go, no, you don't. And he goes, yeah, no, I do. And I go, no, you don't. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, there's nothing out there that's paying 6.5. I go, you'd have to own the absolute worst of the worst garbage bonds possible. So we pulled up his fund. I was right. He wasn't at 6.5, but he was still at 4.5. Okay, 4.5 doesn't sound too bad, right? Well, it's high yield, which means it's junk debt. Okay, junk debt typically performs like equities, like stocks. All right, so you look at junk debt, it was down 30 to 35% on average, maybe not quite, but right around 30, 35%, right in that ballpark last March, down just as much as the stock market. Right, but you're taking stock market risk to make 4.5% before fees. What is the stock market up, 100% since the lows in March or something like that? So you're going to take that kind of risk to make 4.5 before fees? Right? Even that's idiotic. And then, so you look at the bond setup, and it's a loser right out of the gate. It's just, it's not a game of, are they going to be good for you? It's how bad is it going to hurt you? Right? Because we've established now, and if you don't buy it, you got a 14-year track record to look at going back to 2018 or 2008. Okay, that 14 years, what is the average retirement age? What is it, 20 years, right? 19 and a half, I think is the exact. The average retirement lasts 19 and a half years, and it's trending up because people are living longer. But 14 years, that's well over half the average retirement. I mean, what are you waiting for? Are you waiting for it to come back around? Right, you get what I'm saying? You don't have 40 years for the long term to play out. The bonds are never going to make you the kind of money they're projecting. They can't, because in order to make that kind of money, to hold their average that they've averaged in the past, the only reason they achieved those return numbers is because rates were constantly going down. You're out of runway, baby. So it's not me saying, guys, and I don't want you to misunderstand this, it's not me saying that your bonds are going to destroy your wealth. They're just a horrible investment. And it's not because I know they're going to implode. It's because I know they're not going to make you anything. And they could implode. Right? On a risk management level, that's insane. Right? If I'm going to risk 30 to 40% of my capital over the space of 5 weeks, I better be able to make 40 to 50% or 30 to 40% of my capital in the space of a year. You can't do that in bonds. It's a horrible risk-reward setup. And then the fact that you're paying fees on top of it, it's just highway robbery. You should see the look on some of our clients' faces when we go through the projections and we show them what the returns on their portfolio had they kept everything the same and swapped out the bond portion of their portfolio with our bond replacement strategy that has no fee and no risk, part of it anyway. And guys, it's not like magic. But it typically juices the returns on the portfolio between 1.5 to 2.5% a year. Okay, well, you start running those numbers over a 10-year period of time on a $1 million portfolio, you're talking about the difference of, you know, $300,000 to $400,000. And it de-risked the portfolio. So it was like that story I was telling you about the roadshow that we did. Where the guy, you know, sends in, he's trying to post on our roadshow about why annuities are bad and why we're not really fiduciaries and blah, 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 blah. And I told this story, but he put a podcast up from a guy that I know. bagging on annuities. And he started, and I don't want to get into annuity discussion because it's the dirtiest word in investing and people tune out. I think it's an absolute disaster if you sell your real estate portfolio or your stock portfolio to put in an annuity. That's not what it's for. But as a bond replacement? I mean, are you kidding me? Annuities are bad. Compared to what? And you look at these people and you're like, wait a second, I shouldn't have to, I can show, now, are there, you know, we've got one or two annuities that despite the run-up in the market, they're volatility adjusted. They haven't done that well over the last year and a half. I think they're up like, you know, I don't know, 6 or 7%, something like that. And that's like our worst performer by far. But even that thing is averaged, you know, 5.5%, 6.5% like clockwork, and it'll be fine. But you look at this and you're like, you're calling me out for this, and yet you're charging 1.25% to manage a bond portfolio that's paying 2.5% and has 50 basis points of internal fees with inflation at 5.1%, and you're calling out the annuity? I just still can't get my head around it, and I just chalk it up. And they're like, well, yeah, but you don't know. And I'm like, look, man, we had Roger Ibbotson on this show. Okay, Roger's in his late 70s, runs a hedge fund. Professor of finance at Yale. We did this a couple, 3 years back, guys. You can Google it. It's on YouTube. You go listen to it. He worked with Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago. He was on Milton Friedman's economic development team. And the two other guys that were on that team with him were Simon Black and Myron Scholes, the guys that invented the Black-Scholes option pricing model and won a Nobel Prize for economics. Milton Friedman won a Nobel Prize for economics. Dr. Ibbotson refers to himself as the idiot of the group because he's the only one that didn't win a Nobel Prize. But this is a guy that is not trying to set right. He's not out there pushing snake oil. I had him on the show and I said, look, the way we talk about these annuities is we think they're a wonderful replacement for bonds. Basically, we look at them and think that they're a balanced mutual fund that's insured against loss with no fee. And he goes, I think that's a really good and fair comparison. And he wrote a 19-page research paper about why these products, if you use them the way we do, would be better than bonds. And you got these guys, literally these advisors who've never managed a portfolio out there. Oh, anybody that tells you annuity, and you're looking at them going, anybody that tells you annuity? Do you want to take that up with Roger Ibbotson, man? What do you have, a Series 7? He's slightly better credentialed than you are. He manages a $1 billion hedge fund. He's a finance professor at Yale. Worked with Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago. Guys put out more financial research than most people have read. Published, peer-reviewed. And then they're just beating up on the bonds, they're beating up on the annuity side of it. The other kicker with bonds, guys, is that there is a potential for a big nasty blow up in bond land, because what is the world choking on right now, right? What is the primary reason, other than government mismanagement and things of that nature, but what is the primary reason why the quote unquote recovery coming out of the financial crisis was the most tepid economic recovery in history? Right, is the weakest decade of growth. Why? Because there's too much debt. Okay, so the idea in a world that is drowning in debt, that we're going to use debt, which is what a bond is, as the safety guard of our portfolio, and that debt, even though there's more of it and it poses a bigger threat than ever before. Right? And people are like, how do you know it poses a bigger threat? Because there's more of it. It's called leverage. The more leverage there is, the more potential hazard. Right? This is not a controversial statement. Right? But there's more debt out there than there's ever been. It's a more tepid situation because there's more debt. And on top of that, because you're taking more risk than you ever have as a debt investor, you're going to get rewarded by being paid the least amount of interest. And oh, by the way, the inverse relationship with stocks has also expired. Right? So could it blow up and be really nasty? Could you lose 40 to 50% in your bond portfolio? Yes, you could. Am I saying it's likely? No, I'm not saying it's likely, but I'm saying you could. And that's why it makes it so unattractive. I've got an unlimited downside and a very capped upside in bonds. Right? Bonds don't work like stocks. We can't get a good news announcement or a good press release to come out and our bond portfolio pops 20% overnight. That's not the way this works. And this is an insight into our risk management process. It's not just about not losing money. The reason we use the annuities instead of the bonds is to make more money.
People are like, they're trying to take advantage of people's fear. No, we're not. We're sitting there telling, hey, this is a great way to make more money.
We're not selling fear. Right? We're sitting there saying, hey, you're buying that hot dog for a buck. There's one that's twice as big and tastes twice as good selling across the street for 75 cents. We're stating a fact. It just is what it is. And that's the thing that people don't get about risk management. Risk management is not this concern, oh, we're afraid, we're hiding under the table. Risk management over time helps you make more money. And it's not just because we identify the things to avoid. It's because we sit there and go, wait a second, why would I take more risk to make less money over here? It's just, right, in investing, we should constantly be searching out how do we increase our potential upside. And it's key that I use the word potential, because when anybody buys an investment, we do not know how that investment's going to play out. But what we can do, typically, most of the time, is pretty clearly define what we think our upside is and where we think our downside is. The inverse of that is energy right now. Over the short term, are the prices we're buying these energy stocks at, are they risky? Sure, they can do anything over the short term. Over the long term, when you look at the value of the assets the companies own, right? You look at what could happen in energy, but you start doing all that and you're like, whew, this is pretty stinking cheap, man. I mean, if we're looking at this like a company and not a stock, and so that's kind of the inverse. That's the other side where we're looking at and going, you know, on a real basis. Now, markets can do whatever they want. People can sell things off way too far. You know, I think of Bed Bath & Beyond when we bought it back in for $4.60, you know, back in April. My only regret is we didn't buy more. But I remember thinking, you know, it's kind of scary buying a stock with a chart like that. But we know this company and know that this is a ridiculous value. So if people want to sell it to us at this value, we'll take it. Now, I didn't know it was going to 46 in the next 8 months. But, right, that's kind of an example of where I'm saying that, you know, we're looking at things and going, people think about risk management. Yes, we're trying not to lose, but it also works on the flip side. It also tells us what not to invest in because it doesn't offer enough upside. And that's the thing with bonds is you just have return-free risk, meaning you're going to take all the risk and you're not going to get paid anything for it. You should see the look on people's eyes when I look at them and I go, yeah, I actually don't think that it's irresponsible for you to be, if you had to make me pick for somebody between having them in a 60-40 portfolio and just 100% straight equities, even an unhedged straight equity portfolio, I'd say do the unhedged straight equities. I mean, I don't think that's a great idea when you consider valuations in the current environment we're in, but I think it's better than the bonds. Why? Because that 40% you're putting in stocks can and probably will go up. You've got no upside in bonds. I've told people repeatedly, again, I get crazy looks, I'd rather you sit in CDs than bonds. Why? Yeah, maybe the bonds are paying a point, point and a half more. But they can also lose 20% 5 weeks or 30%. It's, again, the risk-reward scenario is just awful. And anybody out there pushing bonds, guys, this is why I told you about, you know, BlackRock, one of the biggest investment firms in the world, bought up an annuity packaging company that designs annuities, bought a chunk in it, dropped some huge money to buy it too. Why? Because they know that's where it's going. They know that this will be the new bond portfolio. I mean, right? Why do we own bonds? For security. The annuity's safer. Annuity costs less. Get fee-free, right? Annuity is inflation-proof. It'll rise with equities as opposed to get going down when bonds go. Because that's the other thing. If equities keep rising and the economy keeps recovering, interest rates got to go up. So bonds get hit. So anyway, I hope I wanted to kind of take a deeper dive into the bond discussion because I wanted people to understand this isn't a sales pitch. I think the annuities are boring, right? It's the most boring part of my job, but they work. It's like Novocaine. It works, right? The other side of it too is, you know, in these crazy times, I don't think it's unwise to have 20 to 30% of your portfolio, assuming it's not hurting your returns, being insured against loss. And, you know, that's where we're at. And if you got bonds, guys, hopefully what I've said here gets through to you. And whether you call us or call somebody else, Now, again, I would not advise going 100% into equities, but there's other things. There's the fixed index annuities we use. There's our real estate fund that, again, it's paying like 6-7% distributions right now. I believe a third of that you're able to write off because you pass through the depreciation, the underlying depreciation. That 6-7% gets paid out every 30 days, not 6-7% every 30 days, right? But you put $1 million in this, you're going to get paid out, you know, $65,000 a year, and that 65 is going to be paid out, you know, 1/12 of that 65,000 gets paid out in January, and it's a beautiful little income producer, and it's had a third of the volatility of the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index over the last 25 years. Right? The point is that if you think outside the box, there are much safer, cheaper, and much more productive places to place your money. If somebody gives you a 60-40 portfolio, don't pay them for that. They're not managing anything. They're just slapping you into a managed money program. And if you want to avoid that, guys, if you want to make sure that you're not sitting back 10 years from now going, I left a quarter of a million or I left $500,000 on the table because I stupidly stuck to bonds when I could have been infinitely safer not paying a fee and making an extra 2.5-3% a year. If you want to avoid that, realizing that by reducing your risk, you could have put an extra 250 to 500 grand in your pocket, call us. There is a better way to do this. You do not have to sit there every time the market drops and go, oh my goodness, things kept falling apart. Right, you got people actively managing your stock portfolios and getting out of the way when they see the trouble coming down the tracks. We're going to get rid of your unproductive bonds, protect you from inflation, and actively manage and take advantages of things like we see, which I still believe is a generational buying opportunity in energy. I think uranium very well could be there too. And a lot of people are freaked out right now. I get it. And I would be freaked out if you own a lot of these normal stocks everybody's following. But there are pockets of the market, guys, that are insanely cheap. And that's why our value fund's up 35% on the year and climbing. And I hope it continues. I don't know. But, you know, 37%, this is the same stock portfolio that was down 12 last March when the stock market was down 36. Stock market's up, what, 15% this year? We're up 35? Again, proof. It doesn't have to cost you. But I wanted to hit on something that I thought was really interesting. And I've been meaning to bring it up, but I forgot about it. Now, you guys know the Federal Reserve. And you guys know my take on the Federal Reserve. The bottom line is this, for people that haven't heard the show before. If you think back to the financial crisis, TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, basically, you know, we all know the story. The Wall Street, you know, Fed kicked out virtually $1 trillion and put Humpty Dumpty back together again and bailed out the banks and did all that stuff. Okay, then they basically did that to the whole economy, running unprecedented quantitative easing, 0% interest rates, and just juiced asset prices. We've been against that from the very beginning because our argument was, yeah, you'll juice asset prices, but you're not going to stimulate the underlying economy. Well, looking back on it today, what do we have? We've got the biggest, longest bull market in U.S. history during the slowest growing decade in U.S. history. So I think that that kind of vindicates our position on the Federal Reserve. I also think the Federal Reserve has driven the vast majority, if not all, of the wealth inequality. And that's really simple, right? When you dropped interest rates to zero after the financial crisis and you ramped up quantitative easing, you benefited the people that owned all the financial assets. And most of the ordinary Joes sold all their financial assets in an effort to save their house and lost their house anyway. Okay, well, then a report comes out, and this actually caught me off guard. This was even... Even I gave the Fed too much credit. On top of determining monetary policy for the entire country, and effectively being the central bank for the world, right, setting interest rates, deciding how much money to print, we find out that these guys behind the scenes are trading their own accounts. Right? Heads of the FOMC, the Federal Open the Federal Open Markets Committee, the Federal Reserve Open Markets Committee. The people that run the Fed are setting monetary policy and then trading their own accounts behind the scenes. If that isn't called fishing behind the net, I was absolutely gobsmacked when I found out that they were allowed to do that. Now, we all know that Congress is legally allowed. There is a law. And that's why I think it's so funny to hear all these politicians get up there and go, we need to reform Wall Street. We need to do the, hey, why don't you start by passing a law that makes it illegal for you guys to trade on inside information? Right? You notice that law never gets passed? Then you flip over to the Federal Reserve, and I thought, for sure those guys can't trade their own position. I mean, if you're in a company and you get issued stock, you've got all kinds of regulations about it, what options you can own, when you can sell it. When you can run the Federal Reserve and go right out of a Federal Reserve meeting knowing what monetary policy is going to be, knowing if you raise rates or cut rates before it gets announced to the public, and you can trade your own account. Like I was joking with somebody, I go, this is part of their comp plan. This isn't an oversight, and they all acted like, well, we need to look into this. And you're sitting there going, come on, give me a break. And I don't want to disappoint you, but it's just more evidence of just how corrupt everything has gotten. Federal Reserve heads of Federal Reserve banks trading their own accounts. Well, we never traded off inside information. Sure, sure. I believe you. Anyway. Just had to share that with you guys. All right. Well, we're out of time. But anyway, have a wonderful week, a remainder of a week, and a great weekend. And guys, like I said, just keep your eyes on it. I mean, the things you should be watching is 14,200 level on the NASDAQ. Okay. Watching that 2,400, 2,450 level on the Russell. Looking at what is it on oil? We're looking at that $80 level on oil, DXY at 94. Those are the things to be watching. And the break could be coming soon, and keep an eye on rates. If rates keep going up, that is, again, another feather in the cap of the breakout in value. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend. As always, guys, risk management. Take the 3 minutes just to inform yourself. Think about that. Just an extra 2.5% a year over 10 years. Remember that. That's what you're leaving on the table. There's a better way. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Download and subscribe to the podcast at knowyourriskradio.com. You can also Google it, Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. You guys know the drill. Have a great week, great rest of your week, great weekend. Well, as always, we'll be back next week. Have a good one. Go Hawks. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.